conjure life but accidentally created a monster. Harvard denied Pincus tenure and no other university would hire him. He was deemed too dangerous. At that point, a more humble man might have chosen a new line of work. A weaker man might have succumbed to anger or despair. But not Goody, as his friends and family called him, as much for his friendly nature as his middle name. For while Pincus was affectionate and disarming in social settings, when it came to his career, he was, as one colleague put it, a street-fighting Jew. Getting knocked down was merely the thing that happened before Pincus got up to fight again. When Harvard dumped him and no other job offers arrived, he moved to Worcester, Massachusetts, a factory town, where a former colleague from Harvard had offered him a low-paying, low-ranking position as a researcher for Clark University. He worked in a basement lab where dust from a nearby coal bin contaminated his experiments. When he asked the university to provide him a proper laboratory, the request was denied. Again, he might have quit. Instead, Pincus and one of his colleagues, Hudson Hoagland, did something unprecedented. They launched their own scientific research center. They went door to door in Worcester and the surrounding area, distributing brochures and asking housewives, plumbers, and hardware store owners to contribute, no donation too small, to a new institution they called the Worcester Foundation for Experimental Biology. With the money they scraped together, they bought an old house in nearby Shrewsbury, where Pincus set up his office and lab in the garage. The operation was so lean in those early years that he cleaned his own animal cages and at one even lower moment moved his wife and children into a state-run insane asylum while conducting research there on schizophrenia. Pincus knew about Sanger. Almost everyone in America did. It was Sanger who had popularized the term birth control and almost single-handedly launched the movement for contraceptive rights in the United States. Women would never gain equality, she had argued, until they were freed from sexual servitude. Sanger had opened the nation's first birth control clinic in Brooklyn in 1916 and helped launch dozens more around the world. But even after decades of work, the contraceptive devices available at those clinics, condoms and cervical caps mostly, remained ineffective, impractical, or difficult to obtain. It was as if she'd been teaching starving people about nutrition without giving them anything healthy to eat. Sanger explained to Pincus that she was looking for an inexpensive, easy-to-use and completely foolproof method of contraception, preferably a pill. It should be something biological, she said, something a woman could swallow every morning with her orange juice or while brushing her teeth, with or without the consent of the man with whom she was sleeping, something that would make sexual intercourse spontaneous, with no forethought or messy fumbling, no sacrifice of pleasure, something that would not affect a woman's fertility if she wished to have children later in life, something that would work everywhere from the slums of New York to the jungles of Southeast Asia, something 100% effective. Could it be done? The other scientists she'd approached, every one of them had said no, and they had given her a long list of reasons. It was dirty, disreputable work. The technology wasn't there. And even if it somehow could be done, there would be no point. 30 states and the federal government still had anti-birth control laws on the books. Why go to the trouble of making a pill no drug company would dare to manufacture and no doctor would dare prescribe? But Sanger held out hope that Gregory Pincus was different, that he might be bold enough or desperate enough to try. It was the midpoint of the century. Scientists were taking up matters of life and death that once had been the domain principally of artists and philosophers. Men in lab coats, and yes, they were almost all men,